All right. Well, welcome, everybody. It is on, isn't it? Guess I don't have to yell. This is the NextGen Learning Track for those of you that are serving or just have the desire to be in the churches that have an average attendance of 151 to 300. Okay, so that's kind of our focus group. Although I know what we're going to be sharing today really is not specific to that size of church. So the principles go across those number lines. So welcome. Why don't we start with prayer and then we'll do some introductions and get right into it. So, Lord, thank you so much for this afternoon. I thank you for the lunch that we had. I pray that it would energize us and not make us more tired and just alert us to just sensitivity to the concepts and the things that we're going to hear today that you want to resonate inside of us. So give us ears to hear what your spirit is saying individually to each one of us. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen. Well, my name is Leslie Klingenmeyer. I am the Mid-Atlantic Next Gen representative in Ohio, and our district goes from Ohio to Virginia with about 120 churches in between, and it's a seven-state area, and so I do a lot of traveling. It's interesting because where our district office is in the corner of our district, so a regular drive, you know, to spend some time with our teams is usually like 4 hours away, so now a four-hour trip to me is like a half-hour trip, you know, so, but I love what I do. My background is children's ministry. I was a children's pastor in Amherst, Ohio for 12 years, and I like to say that I helped raise a generation. The summer that I came in to the day was the summer that the kids that were born in that June of 97 went on to the youth group in June of 2010, or 09 or 10 is when I left the church and then went full-time at the district. So my experience is more in the children's ministry area, and you'll be hearing from these guys. I'll introduce them in a minute who have some other experiences across the way there. My church that I was in the probably 200 when I started and had grown to about 350 when I left. So, again, the experiences that I have had are in this size church. And I think one of the things in thinking about a church this size, there's a tension here. Because many times, especially on the end when it's in that 100 to 200 range, it's big enough that you need more help, but you may not have the volunteer base of people to get the help and probably don't have the finances of the church to have somebody on staff specifically in a children's or youth ministry role. So then as you're growing to 300, you still have that tension of even more so of needing that help, and maybe they've been able to hire somebody on that focuses in those next-gen areas, but then thinking, I need help because it's the church is growing and there's just a lot more to do. So I believe the strength of things even we're going to talk about today is the importance of teams and developing teams, because there's no way that, welcome, come on in. There's some seats in the back there. Because you cannot do it any size church without teams. And there's going to be two sessions today. This first hour, we're going to go till 3 o'clock, is focused on looking at having an integrated strategy for next-gen ministry. And I love this. I think if I had to say a word that is pretty much my mantra right now as I'm traveling around and doing training in our district is intentionality, that things just don't happen. We have to be a lot more intentional about the ministry that we're doing. And with this idea of next-gen ministry being cradle to college, and I love it because that's the national vision for Foursquare. And Kelly Fellows presented this in 09 when we redistricted, and saying that we need to look at the whole perspective here. And what I love about it is he used this analogy of he took these pipes. I always get it wrong, PVC or PCV pipes? PVC. All right. He put these pipes up, and he talked about how many times in our cradle to college ministries, we have the nursery ministry, the preschool ministry, the children's ministry, maybe a tween ministry, youth ministry, young adult ministry. And he stacked those all up. He said the problem with that is you can be in, let's say, the preschool ministry, and then to get to the children's ministry, there's a drop-off there. And where do we especially see that we heard this morning from David Kinnaman? Our high school, going into that college-age young adult. And what he did, and I've been doing this across our district for 3 years, is turning those silos into a pipeline. That you're looking at it as the full continuum and taking those couplers and putting those to connect it along the way. And thinking about the fact that those transitions, which are the couplers between the nursery and preschool, preschool, children's ministry, children to youth, youth to young adult, those are the most important things in that pipeline. That you're always thinking about what's the next step, okay? Where are we leading to? And I'm not going to say a whole lot much more about that because Heidi and Stevie are here. They're going to present just the realities of their church. We've asked them to come today and just share what is the next-gen culture in their church related to this integrated synergy and this strategy that we would have for next-gen ministry. And before I turn it over to them, they're going to share for, I told them, 7 to 10 minutes, and then we'll open it up for questions. I have some questions. I'm going to really listen to some things that we can pull out and kind of talk about. So as you're listening, if you want to jot down a question that you might have about what they're doing, then they would love to be able to answer that. I know when I'm in training or sessions, when I hear real stories of what people are doing, that's the most beneficial to me. So that's what we want to do this morning or this afternoon. Let me tell you just my example, and then we'll turn that over, is that whole silos thing. As a children's pastor, I pretty much had thought, I'm the children's pastor, so this is my deal. And one of the values that was really important to me in children's ministry was raising up kids to serve so that, you know, you think about them as an 8-year-old, what would they be doing as a 28-year-old in the church? So we would have kids in our children's ministry when we had our services that were on the worship team. I had, 8 to 10-year-olds that were running sound. The little 6-year-olds, we made them the light girl or boy, and so I'd have a cue to them for when it was time to turn on the light. And they'd have a chair, and they would think that was so cool. And so they were greeters, and so we had these ministry teams. They came early and trained them. But I never really communicated that well with the youth pastor, because this is what happened. We'd get these sixth graders. Our youth group didn't start till seventh grade. We'd have these sixth graders that could basically run a service, and they were doing it all. But when they got to the youth ministry, the youth pastor had a different values and vision, because he felt like new kids coming in needed to sit for a year to kind of get, take that little break, kind of see what the youth ministry is all about, kind of ease into the youth. Well, imagine these sixth graders who are used to doing the stuff, and then they come in and are told, don't touch the microphones, don't do this. And there was nothing wrong. It was just a different vision and different values. But the problem was we never communicated about that. And we had kids that did not make the jump. They would go for a couple weeks, and some of them didn't go back. Or I'd have to go to them, and they'd say, well, we just, we were a part of it back when we were kids, and we loved doing that, and they won't let us do anything. So kind of had to talk them through for them to understand. But to me, it's kind of the opposite example of what we're talking about today, but it shows how what we do in being intentional and communicating really does make a difference for the kids and the families that we're serving. So I want to introduce Heidi Strickler. I'm going to let her tell you about her church, but Heidi's a good friend of mine. Her church is only about 15 minutes away from where I live, and some dynamic things are happening. And Heidi has an interesting role because she's kind of one of those, wherever the need is, that's where she ends up serving. So she's been doing some different things. So why don't you go ahead, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to set my watch for 8 minutes, and then when it goes off, you'll know that you have 2 more.
Okay, hopefully I won't get to 8, because I don't want to, you guys are in a food coma. Actually, in sitting all day. I get more tired sitting all day than I do actually like being on my feet. There's something about that. My name is Heidi. I am an associate pastor in Vermilion, Ohio, which is 30 miles west of Cleveland, right up on Lake Erie. beautiful place. It's a blue-collar kind of a community, Ford plant and all of that there. I actually grew up in Vermilion, went away to college, came back, and I've been on staff now for 10 years. And I started off as a children's pastor, and where I served before, it's interesting the path the Lord has for you, because when I was on staff in Virginia at a church, I started off as children's pastor, then I went to youth pastor, and then I moved over to senior pastoring for a season. And so it's when I came to Ohio, I started off as children's pastor. I am now youth pastor, which was only supposed to be 6 months, and it's a year and a half now. And I've got another year to go, but that's in that, and I'm going to talk about that. We're in a season of growth. We are averaging about 250. We are not a traditional. We're not a traditional church in this sense. We attract a lot of unsaved people, a lot of kids who come to our church. Parents do not come to church, and so that's a challenge for us. The way you're brought up and the things that you experience really do shape how you view ministry. And I remember when I was 19 years old, I had youth pastors. I went away to college. I knew I was called. I went away to college for a year, and I came back. Circumstances, I didn't go back. And I was the only one. We had like a youth group of 40. And I was the only one really, once we graduated from high school, that really remained committed to the Lord of my peers, like really strong. And they all like stopped coming to church, but I was there 3 times a week, the only one my age, and I began to feel like, this is just uncomfortable, I don't belong. And so I went to my youth pastors and I said, you know, I love the church, this is family, but I feel like I'm not being fed. That's what I said to them. There's nobody to hang out with me. And they were so gracious to me, and they released me and said, if you need to go look for something, you know, go. And they said to, and I said to them, well, I will tell you before I do. The very next week I come to church, and they ask me, hey, we have no children's program. Would you start the children's program? I was 19 years old, and they said there is no curriculum, but I don't think any of us knew that there was. That was like 20-something years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed. And what it taught me is sometimes with kids and young adults, we think we have to do things, speak to them, you know, just, you know, they're just like this empty receptacle, and we don't teach them to serve. And so what has been a real strong passion of mine, my closest friends became 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds at the age of 19, 40-year-olds. I taught with a 70-year-old who was the meanest woman I'd ever met. And I remember reading, but she softened. We were a great tag team together, and she loved the kids. She just was a little harsh. But that set something in me that whether I'm working with kids or youth or young adults, they have to be integrated into the body of Christ because they are the church too. They don't become the church when they turn 18. They don't become the church when they're 25. They are the church at that point. And so, honestly, I've done, my primary role really isn't kids and youth in the church. I do a lot of the pastoral and the discipleship from the whole thing. But we have to, I wrote it down here, we have to teach the young adults and the kids and the youth that it's not about them, because it's not about me, it's about Jesus, and it's about serving and getting to know. And so there we're in this big flux right now, so we are moving towards having, I will be the next gen director when everything settles. We're in transition, and how that's going to look in our church, because no two churches really are the same. Culture is different, and one of the things of coming to a conference, you feel like, oh, I've got to do it this way. I've got to do it this way because that's working. Every culture, you can learn things from people, but you really need to take it to the Lord in prayer and see how it works. And every place where I've ever been assigned, I've asked the Lord, how can I do this best here? How can I disciple? How can I raise up leaders? So we're taking some of what Foursquare has proposed. I'll be the next gen director, and I am the next gen director. It's just I'm filling some of the roles down there. We'll have a next gen administrator who will do the fundraising. Because one of the problems that I found between the youth, before I took over the youth and I was children's pastor, sometimes I clashed with the youth pastor. I mean, we loved each other, but we didn't have the same, like for camp, we didn't have the same procedures for scholarships. You know, did they have their background checks? Did we have our background checks? All of that, good morning or good afternoon, all of those things should be the same. You know, that if there's some things that just should be the same, and so why reinvent the wheel? So we're going to be having a next-gen administrator who will do some of that. Then we will have a children's pastor. We'll have a youth, and we have that now, and a youth pastor. We're about a year out, so I'm the acting youth pastor, but I got a great team. I've got a team of about 8. And then in the fall, we have an unofficial young adults group, and it's called YABS, Young Adult Bible Study, but we're going to be more intentional, and we have somebody picked that's going to come and we have and be that. We have about 10 graduating from high school. Half of them are not going away to school. They're going to the community college. They're already used to coming to church on Wednesday night, so now is the good time to start. So we're just starting a lot of things where some things have worked really well, but I do believe that they have to get serving. One of the things that I'm making sure I'm covering everything. But one of the things that need, if you're a senior pastor in here, I work for the best pastor. I am his biggest fan. He and his wife are just amazing. And he considers himself a youth pastor. You know, he came to a point in his life, he realized he had been a district youth guy years ago, and he realized that he could do the best for the next generation as a senior pastor. And so a third of our congregation is under the age of 18. And then that's not including the next gen, and we have the young adults. We have a lot of young adults, and they are the biggest thorn in my side in a good way, because just getting them discipled properly, and they're tougher than the kids. But with all of that being said, an example of how I try to integrate them into the body of Christ, into the whole church body, is we have a girl. Her name is Jessie. I've had her since she was 8 and when I came, and she is graduating from high school, feels called in the ministry. Leslie has done some mentoring with her too, some discipling of her, and she's moving in. But we had a woman's retreat last fall that we went to. We had Jessie there who was 17, and we had 65-year-olds, and you couldn't really tell the age difference when we're sitting around eating a meal and we're hanging out in the cabins. And the older people love to be around the younger people. They're supporting them financially. I mean, our church donates probably about $8,000 a year to camp, you know, and so like every kid, and we'll probably have about 40 to 50 going, will have $50 off automatically to their camp, and that's not the scholarshiping of kids who can't. So our church really believes that. And some of us think, oh, the youth don't want to be around the older people. They really do. Not all the time, but they have to have access. So I have teens on the greeting schedule because I'm over all the frontline ministries in our church. And so they're on the greeting schedule. They're doing the stuff, and we have a long way to go. And the one thing I want you to know is we are in transition. And I told Leslie, what am I going to share? Because this is all in flux. We're growing. I'm revamping our youth team right now because I have way too many leaders on the team. That sounds weird, but it's not. But we had nothing to do with our young adults, so they put them in leadership with the youth, which created a whole scenario that's not the most healthy, but at least we didn't lose them. And so now we're trying to do something to correct that. So that's really kind of our story. I hope you get a feel of our congregation, and I know that we're not like anybody else, but the thing is there needs to be a continuity. There needs to be, the children's pastor needs to know what's going on in the youth department, and the youth department needs to go, because one of the things that we find is, you know, if you ever have a fifth grader that's not ready for youth group, they may be developmentally delayed, but oh no, we have this hard and fast rule, and we don't want him. He's, you know, with this, we have dialogue, and we can keep them back, and we work with the parents, and we're all on the same page, and then you have a team concept, because the 5 of us, the positions I named, will meet monthly, and we'll be the next gen team that will help assimilate them into the church and all of that. And we have an internship program too. That's something that we do with the young adults if they're interested in ministry. So we do put a lot of time and effort, and I think that pretty much covers everything. And
tell them about your with the money for camp, what you do each week with the offering.
We keep it before the congregation every week. We have a whole building just for kids, and it's the Lego clubhouse. Cool building. And so we found these Lego banks, and we put them in the offering plate, And so it's all the loose change. So every week people are giving to camp. It's just in there, and it's really loud. When we switched over to that, we're like, but it's okay. And that's what they do. So every week they're giving to camp, and that helps very.
And how much money did you get last year?
I think we got about $8,000 for a church of...
From spare change.
Just spare change.
Church
yeah.
Of
like
200
two, we were about, yeah, but we were about 225 last year was our average, and we're, yeah, so...
I love that, because I think that's something that every church could easily do, and I love how she said that it keeps it in front of the church and the importance of camp and kids. So if you have questions, go ahead and jot those down. We're going to have Stevie Mitchell share with us now, and Stevie might have that glazed over look. She is the head, has organized all the next-gen activities that are happening for our children and youth this week. So if you have children and youth that are in the programming, you can thank Stevie for that. So why don't you go ahead and share your church situation and kind of the organization of that? And
I will. Okay. I apologize because I am a little glazed, and I hope I make sense. The rain just keeps going and going. I am fortunate enough to be a part of a church plant that was started 8 years ago right in Anthem, which is a little bit north of Phoenix. And the concept of the church was being built as a team. So there were six of us that came in as executive pastors to develop the mission and vision of the church. And my husband and my role was to come on with the concept of family ministry and making sure that the family was always before what we did. And as we developed our mission and vision of the church, we constantly went back to how does this affect all the generations? How does this affect the family unit? And I've been very honored and privileged to be a part of a team that every week as an executive pastor, I could say, well, no. Well, what about the kids? Well, what about our youth? How is this going to affect the family? Have you thought about this? So my paradigm is different from a lot of you because I get to be there every day and in the forming of it as we formed our mission and vision statement of our church, it included that. My job description, one of the many, much like yours, is that I am the family ministries pastor. And for us, that is zero through cradle is only a portion of it. I am responsible for marriage. I'm responsible for parenting. I am responsible for anything that has to do with a family. So when it comes to counseling and wholeness and all of those things, that comes under my umbrella. Mm. So for us, though, that's very exciting because even as you see in Foursquare, we're working really hard to change those silos. We still have a lot of silos out there in our churches. And a lot of ministries that are off doing their own thing. So when women's ministry is off doing their thing, they may not be thinking about how it affects the family and how we can reinforce it all the way around. So much in the church that we have today is you walk up on the property and everybody goes their separate ways. Mm-hmm. As you look up the definition of what family is now, it's just people that live together. No longer does it have to do with that you're related by blood, that, you know, you love each other. Doesn't have to be any of those things. It's that you happen to live together is what creates a family. So as we have developed and sought the Lord for our church, it is that we would always keep that on the forefront of our mind and whatever we do. And there have been times we're a growing church. We have gone through a building project. We went, you know, starting with six people, outgrowing our building a new property. And during those seasons, there was times when we would be there and they'd say, okay, to solve the seating issue so that we can grow, let's remove the children from the worship part of the service. And we'd go, no, it's not going to happen. Because if we do that, then we change what we believe. So we are really intentional about everything we do, anything that the church does. How does that affect the whole family? And how are we, just like Heidi, where you're always allowing and providing the opportunity to serve, we too are looking at how does the whole family serve? We really believe in families serving together. So if mom and dad are the ushers, then little Johnny that's 4 years old is an usher too. Mm-hmm. And One of the things that we also believe at our church is that our mission statement is people of purpose. And we believe that not only does God give each individual a purpose, but he gives a family a purpose too. And there's an anointing and calling on every family. And part of our job is to help the families discover that and train them, equip them, authorize and mobilize them in that calling. So because of that, that gives us lots of opportunities to minister to all the generations together and provide that. It's not unusual to see our children and our youth leading out in worship, and they're on the worship teams. They're prophesying. They are out in the congregation ministering to people because we keep that together. We provide opportunities. And I was asking some of my team this morning, I'm like, okay, I'm brain dead. Tell me some of the things we do. What do we do? What's something we do well? And one of their comments were, Stevie, you have an expectation. You have an expectation that God has called everyone, and you expect your two-year-olds to minister as much as you expect the 99-year-old in our church to minister. And our job is to provide that opportunity. So just as you talked about how in the past where you had your sixth graders, they were leaders, and then they went into seventh grade, and they weren't. We make sure that doesn't happen. We have a thing, we have discipleship from first grade up. Our first through fourth graders have a specific discipleship they go through. I have one for fifth and sixth graders. Our youth, by the time our youth are in youth, then we begin to integrate them into the adult discipleship. We've done it separately, but they really do much better having the adults pouring into them and doing it together. Because it's a culture for us, it works well. May not work in other churches, but we do things together, so it does work and they like it. When a sixth grader graduates from discipleship, we do a graduation evening. And we have a sit-down dinner, a very elegant dinner. They come very dressed up. We have candlelight dinner type thing, and we invite their parents. My youth team comes, and my whoever is doing the discipleship for my fifth and sixth graders come. We have dinner together, and then we sit them down. And then my whoever's over discipleship, which many years has been me, I begin to present them to the youth leaders and say, this is the gift you are getting. This is their giftings. This is their callings. This is what God has called them to do, and this is who they are. Well, we don't tell the parents what's happening. So then the parents, you know, are sobbing, and then they then we say, would you please share with our youth team what has God spoken to you over the years about your child? Who are they? What are you believing? What are their strengths? How can we partner with you? And then we do that. Then we lay hands on them, and we anoint them, and we release them, and we pass the baton to our youth leaders. So we work really hard not to have those gaps. Like Heidi, I am over all of it. So I'm working with the leaders in all of the areas and making sure that we're very much on the same page. At my church, we seek the Lord for a word every year. And whatever that word is, like this year, our word for the church is taste and see. Every single thing we do this year is related to taste and see, from my three-month-old to the 99-year-old. So we write all our own curriculum so that whatever the adults are learning, the youth are doing it, and the kids are doing it every week. So another one of our mottos is life happens around the table. So if we are teaching the same thing, then when they're having dinner at home, they're talking about the same things. And they can interrelate with each other and talk about those things as it's going along. Am I out of time?
1 minute.
1 minute. Well, another thing that we do that relates to the parents is I believe that there's probably more, but basically 12 milestones that every individual will go through from the time they are born up till the time they're 18. And what we've done is develop them into workshops. Some of them are very, very basic. Everybody's going to get saved. Everyone's going to get dedicated. Everyone's going to graduate from school. But there's some other ones that are really memorials. And I grew up Catholic, you know, and some of those things within the Catholic Church were good. I remember when I made my first communion. I remember that first time, and I remember how it was a celebration. So within these milestones, I wanted to help families celebrate and make it really special. So one of our milestones is, this is my Bible. And I have a 3-hour workshop on training parents how to use a Bible and train their kids to read their Bibles and to journal, and to teach them how a 2-year-old, when they read the Bible to them, can begin to journal and soap it and do it. It is amazing. They will do it, and they will be able to come back. You know, a 2-year-old, if you show them where it says the word Noah in their Bible, and this is where the Bible talks about Noah, and they highlight it, they'll come back and tell you where that is, even though there's no pictures, because they'll remember where they marked that page. So we train them to get them. So use your Bible now. Do you know that the research says that you shouldn't give a child a Bible till they're 7 years old? Wow. That is the stupidest thing I ever heard. But that's the culture. So why would parents think about kids bringing their Bibles? Why do our teachers think they should have their Bibles in their preschool room? Because they don't know how to read it. Our culture is, let's get them ready. Let's get them trained. Let's bring them into the presence of God so that when they're 18, they wouldn't even think about leaving. We won't lose them if we've allowed them to experience it, encouraged them, and expected it.
That's awesome. That's good stuff. All right. That's right. I don't need that. Okay. Questions that you'd had for either one of them? Something that stuck out that you thought, I would love to hear more about that? Or how do you do this? Go ahead. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We have to get this on tape. I know. I'm sorry.
I work with a church that has primarily kids who come without their parents, probably like over 70%. And I really liked the idea of like getting the kids involved in the service. I wanted to hear more about that. Like, how do you do that? How do you come up with like enough things for them to do? I just wanted to hear more about that.
The ones who commit to coming on Sunday mornings, you know, because when their parents aren't coming on Sunday mornings, they're not necessarily coming. But we're starting to see the shift where they are coming on Sunday mornings even. Actually, in the past, God's just doing such a cool work. Families are coming. Their parents are, or their grandmas are starting, and their moms and the aunts are starting to come. We need 4 greeters every week, so you put them on the greeters. We stop after 2 songs and have coffee and cookies in the back for greeting time. I need help with setting out the cookies. You know, I have a team set up for kitchen. In our church, there's quite a bit to do. We have to have chairs tore down after the second service because we meet in it's our building, but we call it a sanctionasium. We use it all week long, but it's a gym too. You know, so there's a lot to do. We do that. So they're serving. We use our youth, those who are interns, to pray over the offering, to take the offering, to do announcements. Every week we say the same thing, and everybody in our church, there's one thing that's important to us, and it's worship. And there's a spiel that we give for people who are new before we go into the break, because we explain everything. Everything we do, we explain it every week because we just have new people coming, and it's a value of our church. So that's how we do work day. If we have work day, we try to include them. So, you know, and sometimes and we also have some of them helping in the kids' ministry, but they have to be vetted and all of that. But that's, again, me working with the children's pastor. I'm not going to send true story. And this is not dogging. I'm not dogging the youth pastor who was there before. But we were going to camp, and we needed a teen guy to go with us as a junior leader. And I wanted this one in particular. It was all set up. The youth pastor decided, and he sent me this other one. And I love the kid, and the kid and I are super, super close. And he shows up, and I'm thinking, why? I just seen him with kids. It's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be a nightmare. And it was a nightmare. I mean, I'm a strong personality, but I actually had to call my senior pastor halfway through the week, go, I'm sending him home if he doesn't. But the thing is we set the kid up for failure. He's not good with kids. Why would you do that? Now, I will not send a youth over to work with the kids who doesn't have the heart for it, who's going to push them down the steps, or, you know what I'm saying? You know your kids. And that's another benefit of, and we don't just use youth in kids' ministry just because we need the people. they have to have heart and all that. So they're just, you know, just looking around for that. That was a long answer, but that's those are the things that you can do. And it's amazing. It's in every church is different. I'm jealous. I wish I had more parental involvement.
Well, I think that opens up, kind of piggyback off your question, Stevie, for you. What do you do when you have those kids that don't have a strong family?
Yeah, I don't have necessarily the parent involvement in the ministry. I get it at home. That's where I work really hard, which is interesting that it's such a strong component of our church, yet I don't have a strong parent involvement in the ministry aspect of it. They're doing it at home, but they don't want to be in the classroom. They don't want to be there at youth and any of those things. Another suggestion is there was a season where I had a lot of kids that weren't coming from home, and I didn't have time to disciple them or train them. And a real basic thing we did was we had name tags like what all of you are working, and they thought it was cool to have a name tag, so it would be the greeter, the tech person. Mm-hmm. But then on the back of it was a very detailed step-by-step of what this job included. Because it's crazy on Sunday morning. It's crazy on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And you want these kids to succeed, but you're running around all over the place. So we just did really very, smile. It's a good thing to smile. Mm-hmm. You know, pray. Whatever the things were that they had to do. And we just had little bullet points of this is what you had to do. And you'd say, okay, go take this. Go read this. Mm-hmm. If they weren't doing it, you had your accountability right there on how to do it too.
So. Talk about for your classes. Do you have kids that come that don't have a mom or dad that's part of the church? Are there other people that would step into that role? Like you're talking about six going into youth group. Who could be there?
There was a season in our youth group where we only had 20% of our youth were from our church. We happened to be the only youth group that was on Sunday night, so they all came and hung out at our church. Mm-hmm. Since then, all of the churches have had now do Sunday night youth group, so we don't have as many. During that season, we did. We do a lot with mentoring. Our Pastor Marion was our senior pastor until September, and she stepped aside, and her son is now the senior pastor. But she has a philosophy, and it's that the Lord gave it to her right away when she got married, and it was called the 10-10 principle. And the Lord spoke to her and said, I want someone 10 years older speaking into your life. Mm-hmm. I want you to find somebody that is 10 years older than you and have them speaking in your life. And at the same time, I want you speaking into the life of someone 10 years younger than you. Mm-hmm. That is a mainstay of our church. So, yes, even as we would have kids and youth that wouldn't be a part of our church, we are always, always looking to make sure that there is someone mentoring them and giving them the opportunity to mentor. What we have found over the years, that it needs to be much more structured. When we first started it with my youth pastors, they were like, we don't need any boundaries. I'm like, you need boundaries. Oh, no, we don't. I'm like, okay, no boundaries this year. How are you going to measure it at the end of the year? How are you going to see that you've accomplished what God has? We're still working on that process of what it does. We always have a start and a finish time so that it can be renewed to look at it. We ask both sides to come up with goals and objectives that they would like to accomplish during that year. We also say that you have to meet at least twice a month with them. But we assign, and I would say there's a high percentage of our church that have people mentoring them. Some of them are kind of piggies and would like three or four of them. But at least one person speaking into their life.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's something to take. Right. What else? Yeah.
Kind of on that thing with the kids and leadership. My name is Ben, and I'm a next gen leader in Tulsa, and our situation is that. I've got plenty for kids to do, but when you try to talk to them about, hey, you know, I want to raise you up as a leader, they're like, no, I don't want to be a leader. I don't want to, you know, and so I guess my thing with that is, how do you grow them up so that they understand that at some point they're supposed to be serving in the ministry? They're supposed to serve in the church, even if it's setting up cookies.
And when you guys answer that, focus on the integrated model, how that would progress with that.
For me, it's really simple. I expect it. Mm. I expect it, so I get it. I show, starting as young as the toddlers, starting that I expect them to hear the voice of God, come to the Father, hear what he's saying, and do it. Because I expect that, and I continually ask them, what is God saying? How is he speaking to you? Then I know that it's my job to provide opportunity for God to do it. As they start to see, oh, yeah, God's speaking to me. God has something. I had this vision. I'm going to do this. And that they will begin to respond and begin moving in it. So I don't usually have a problem with them. Now, are they lazy? Absolutely. Do they want to play sometime instead of doing it? Absolutely. But they know that they are called by God, and God has a job for them, and he has created them for greatness, and he needs them. He needs them. They know that when it's somebody sick, well, okay, go lay hands on them and pray for them and expect God to do something. So they'll do it. And I think for me, it's that easy. I have an expectation. My leaders have an expectation. And nothing, we won't settle for anything less. And the kids always rise to the expectation that you have for them. Your youth will rise to the expectation. If we don't think they're going to do anything, if we don't think they can make a difference, they're not going to do it. But if we expect it, then they will rise. You know, this week we are using the majority of my fifth and sixth in youth are running what we're doing with kids. I have some interns. I don't have very many adults from my church here, but I have my youth ministry and my fifth and sixth kids that are in discipleship doing it. And, you know, they can do it. They know what's expected. And they love it, you know. You got to love the Holy Spirit. You know, so it's like you, again, very early on in the ministry, what the Lord said to me was, bring them into my presence and I will do the rest. Mm. For me, I thought that meant leading worship. I didn't sing to my kids because I didn't want them to think that's what music sounded like. That I was like, okay, God, this is going to be fun. This is a scary thing right now. He said, but if you'll be obedient and lead them into my presence, I'll do the rest. Mm. That's what I live by. I can bring them into the presence. God will speak to them, and then he will minister to them, and he'll bring revelation. And when a kid grabs a hold that God said, when a youth grabs a hold, when an adult grabs a hold of God said, it changes everything.
Not everybody's called to be a leader, but everybody's called to be a servant. Mm. You know, and that might be part of the difference, but I know that in our own, from the top down, actually, my pastor's philosophy, and he teaches this all the time to us, and it's in every area of every age group, from birth to I don't want to say death because you're not doing it, but you know, birth to grave to when you're older, he has the inverted pyramid. Like when you're first saved, you're at the peak. You know, that's where you come in, and as you grow in the Lord, you're working your way down. It's the world says you got to rise to the top and you're at the pinnacle, but but according to Jesus, it's the opposite. You come in the top, and then the people who are on the bottom serving everybody else are the pastors, those who are called. This is something little, but even our pastor is always demonstrating this. He's the one, he helps set the chairs up. He'll help tear them down. When we have a church dinner, the staff is I hate the word staff, but the pastoral staff is the one that's last in line. We make sure everybody else has enough food. You know, the church isn't there to serve us. We're there to serve them. And so modeling that, I don't care what, from kids to whatever, that's integrated ministry. And I just think the best is by example. The age group that, and I love them, and I spend a lot of time with the 18 to 24, 26-year-olds, because all they want to do is hang. But I read a quote about 2 weeks ago that says, everybody wants the perks of being a leader. Everybody wants to have the privileges of being a leader, but they don't want to have to pay the price, you know. And so there is a price, and we show that especially to the interns, because honestly, my young adults are not setting a good example right now. We were supposed to talk about challenges. My young adults, because they're so newly saved, or just haven't been discipled properly, which is I take responsibility for the Lord's working with us in that. Sometimes like they've arrived, that some things are beneath them, and that is really changing. But that affects the youth group, and so I'm just getting firmer and firmer with them. You know, do all things without complaining. You know, do. And so some of it you have to do, you have to correct, but you have to set the example. And, you know, most of the kids really do want to serve. It's when they start getting up to the youth group, like, and actually sometimes it's our own fault. We, like, everything, it's, again, we think the world revolves around, you remember being a teenager, you do think the world revolves around you, but it doesn't. And part of discipling them properly is teaching them that it's always about somebody else. And that's not like not taking care of them. In fact, it's the opposite if you want to properly disciple them. So really, it's a lot of that's by example and not being afraid to sometimes speak into their lives, never publicly. You never want to belittle anybody. But I've had to pull some aside and say that's not being a servant. If you really want to be a leader, that's not going to fly here. And actually, what we have found, and I wish we would have learned it, because we have so many newly saved, we set the bar way too low. And we are in the process of setting it really, really high. If you can't live by these, we're not bending them, then you don't want to be a part of our internship or part of the student leadership for the youth group.
A couple other things that we've learned. When I was an early mom, I didn't understand the concept behind, one in particular was manners. I grew up in the East Coast of the Northeast, and I remember being this young mom and thinking, I'm going to throw out the Mr. and Mrs. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to teach my kids that. And you know what? My kids are going to go through the line first because it makes life easy for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand what I was doing until someone taught me the why behind it. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my goodness, I am raising up these selfish kids. Mm-hmm. I think we have to teach them the why. Teach them the why. At our church, we call it the diamond principles. You know, and I studied what Ritz-Carlton did and why they do what they do. And I'm like, okay, if I can teach people why, then I'm not always going to have to be there mm-hmm. to do it. But they don't understand. They are so me-focused instead of other-focused. And if we can challenge them, like Heidi's been saying, to become other-focused, then they'll if they understand the why, they'll move in that way. When they don't understand why, now I understand why I should have said Mr. and Mrs. Mm-hmm. I understand why, you know, my kids want to eat first and they want to eat now. Because mm-hmm. I trained them to do that. And you're all in your churches. They may not have had the same upbringing that you have. And they have world views, so they don't understand the biblical worldview, a biblical view. So it's up to us to begin to train them to have that other mentality. And also being able to train them, too, that what is good, better, and best. Mm-hmm. Good is what the world says is really good. Better is what most of our families do. The best would be the way Jesus would have modeled it for us.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I saw this hand first. Microphone.
Well, my name is Jesse Kerr. I'm one of the youth pastors over at Living Way Four Square Church in California. And basically, more or less, what my question is we have a certain amount of student leaders in our youth ministry. And I'm curious on what kind of attributes and qualities and level of maturity that we would like to see to expect in them as you're picking a student leader. Understand? So more or less attributes, qualities, and even this, personalities, that would be a good, a healthy selection to start off with. So,
and I just want to say before we get their takes on this, our next session is going to be very much focused on discipleship. So if you have a question that's going to relate to discipleship, we're going to have three other presenters for that also.
Faithful, like, to me, their personality, if they're, you know, you could have somebody who's shy as a mouse, but they are so committed and they're so faithful. I have a girl now who's so painfully shy, but she's there every time the doors are open, and, you know, she agreed to be a greeter because I felt like from the Lord she needed to be pushed a little bit. They have to be faithful. They have to take direction. For me personally, I really have an issue with complaining. I just, there's just something about it. And, you know, if somebody's going to complain about what they're doing, everybody has to at some point, but if that's their negative, that's their culture, that can be a deal breaker for me. Not a deal breaker where they can't be used, but I would really address that, and it would be something that maybe they would sit out for a while. But to be honest, we have had such a low bar, some of the leaders that I have, and Leslie knows, because I talk with her all the time, ask for advice, that it's an issue. Make sure you set it high, because it's easier, it's harder to deal with it on the back end, because you hurt people in the end, because you're going to have to move, you know, proceed cautiously when you're putting somebody in leadership, because it you could really hurt people, and that's what I'm struggling with now. I don't want to have to remove somebody and end up losing them from the church. So it's a struggle. It's not easy.
We have this thing at our church called nerfs and knives. A nerf never hurts anybody. So we always make sure whenever, whatever the ministry is, whatever it is, that we provide nerf-type opportunities to serve. So, you know, we're really careful about who we want with our 0 to 18, but there are some things. They can go flip a hamburger in my cafe. Mm-hmm. They can work behind the scenes for me. So we have nerf jobs that they can't hurt it. Mm-hmm. And then we have our knife jobs. Those are the things we really value. And they're the ones that are before our kids. They're the ones that are preaching. They're the ones that are on the ministry team. For them, if we give them a knife type opportunity, then that they need to be discipled. And at our church, we do OSL, and they have to have completed the first two levels of OSL. We have a couple other areas of discipleship that they also need to be working towards and completing those. If they've completed those, and then we also do a ministry connect with them. So we really find out what their gifts are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and make sure that we put them someplace where they will succeed. So someone may come in and say, I really like youth, but like you said, they're really shy, but they're great behind the scenes. I have one of those right now. She would do anything for me, but she doesn't talk to anybody. So like this week, she's making sure we eat all week long. And she just keeps cleaning up our office and making sure there's food and telling me what I need to do, when I need to do it. So we spend a lot of time finding out what is their strengths. Because I'm sure all of you, we get somebody trained and they leave. Mm-hmm. We're like, all I do is train people. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we put them in the right place at the right time so that we have them for a long time.
Mm-hmm. We are actually at 3. I want to make sure about a couple things. One is, could you each give your email address? So that if people have questions that you want to follow up on, go ahead.
I would love that. I would love that. H, it's all lowercase, H Strickler, Strickler, 950@yahoo.com.
And mine is Stevie, Stevie. @gracenorth.com.
Let me go ahead and give you mine, too. Mine's a little longer. It's going to be L. Klingenmeyer. So it's LKLINGENMEIER @foursquare.org. The big joke is someday I'm going to marry a Korean doctor. I'm going to be Leslie Cho, just to make up for the long name that I've had to deal with for all these years. I want to throw out one resource for you, too, because I have been doing a lot of reading on what you have implemented with the milestones. And there's a book by Brian Haynes, Haynes, and it's called Shift. And he also has a website called Legacy Milestones, either .com or .org. And it would be a great read for you, because I believe that strongly in that as a family ministry model, that you're coming alongside parents at those times in their life when they're looking to the church, when their baby's born, a baby dedication, salvation, water baptism, Holy Spirit baptism. Now, he's not going to talk about Holy Spirit baptism because he's Baptist, but we want to throw in the Foursquare version of that. So I would look at that and really pray about implementing. But I would also say, and I say this about any resource I ever give, none of those are the Bible, all right? So you use the resources, and then you pray and say, Holy Spirit, what can I glean out of here that would make it ours for our church and our culture? So could you guys help me thank Stevie and Heidi for sharing their wisdom? And we're going to take a 15-minute break, but our next session is going to be solely focused on discipleship and those questions about student leaders and how do you grow kids and youth. And I think we got some really cool things to be learned in that session. So take a 15-minute break, walk around, and we'll meet back here at 3:15.
Awesome. Well, we're senior pastors. We've just started our second year as senior pastors at the River in the city of Norco. Both had a lot of experience as youth pastors, but stepping into a senior pastor role at a church, coming through some really hard transitions, I think it dipped down to, like, one summer it was like 25 people, and so it was like it was almost a complete restart in plant, and we're just now getting to this season of trying to find, I guess, the right rhythm to sustain discipleship and spread it throughout the rest of the congregation. But some of the things that we've had to deal with, and I know, like, I think for me, discipleship has always been a value, but one of the things, I want to back it up instead of just going, hey, this is what we're doing and this is the program that's working for us. I want to share with you more of the heart issue that I had to deal with as it related to discipleship, because raising up a whole bunch of young leaders and then watching them leave, it's kind of like, I imagine, you know, being a parent, it's like empty nest over and over and over again. And with a small church that needs leaders and needs help to reach a community, it's a little tough to release and let people go. And it's like, hey, why? How come you don't want to help me and help build a team here and reach a city? And the Lord years ago showed me out of 1 Samuel 13:19. He said that the Philistines didn't fear Israel because there were no blacksmiths in the land. And so there's a nation that is ruled by prophets and kings, but there were no blacksmiths. There was no one willing to do the hard work, the thankless work behind the scenes, to raise up weapons and put them in other people's hands and send them out so that, you know, hey, the church down the street, the church across town, whatever, can have an effective tool, a resource to be used. And so for me, it was like, man, I had to get over the me stuff and help me and settle in me that identity that God has called me to be a discipler, a blacksmith, to shape leaders and be okay with releasing them, being okay with letting them see, you know, the exciting stuff. You know, maybe I'll never see revival come. You know, I don't know. But I'm going to work towards it. I'm going to shape people and send them out into that. And so I had to really deal with, you know, the heartache and some of the ego stuff that came with investing so much and being able to deal with really releasing them. And it's been much easier to persevere through the discipleship process to see that, hey, maybe I won't see really the fruitfulness and right away, but I'm willing to pour into it. It's allowed me the freedom to pour out more and to be okay with that over and over again. But I don't know if you guys struggle with that, like, hey, I've invested so much and I've done so much, but I really wish somebody would own the vision like me and help serve the local church and stuff. And so I wanted to encourage you guys more than anything, giving you some cool program or advice. Like, dealing with the heart issue of discipleship over and over again. I believe God's called us to be blacksmiths and people who are willing to lay it down and not just be prophets and kings.
My name is Mandy Vieira, and I'm serving along with Jared. I think I don't really get to do a whole lot of church right now because I'm working full-time at another job that's an hour away, so that's a 10-hour job for me. But what I do see, what I do is I do disciple. And I remember Tim Wimberly was my youth pastor, and I remember pulling him aside and being like, he's like, you need to disciple people. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And he just said, you just take them wherever, like, wherever you go, you take them. And so as soon as I knew that, like, I take girls to the post office with me. I take them to the grocery store with me. They see, like, what my day is inside and out. Now that I'm working full-time, I don't get to do that as much. But that's all that I know is just to take people wherever I'm at and let them experience my life because my life is ministry. And my life is full of Jesus. And so I was a part of, before Jared and I got married and we moved to Norco, I was at New Life, which actually is where Reed's at. And and I was there, and we grew the church from about 100 people to about 600 people. And so I got to walk through that transition of raising some people up through that, raising up some leaders and disciples. And so I'll probably be able to talk about that. My big thing in that area is that I realized that I know nothing. And so I had to find people that knew how to do things. So like student leaders, I love the idea of it. I knew I couldn't do it well. But I had a leader that was passionate about it, and she created a program, and she made it run well, and I just got to come in and look like the, you know, the one that got to share every once in a while. But if I created it, it would have been so lame. We just wouldn't have went and hung out and talked about Jesus, and it wouldn't have had the purpose that it had behind it. And so it was the importance of finding a leader that could do what I couldn't do. So.
So if it's getting crowded in here, I'm sorry for that. I didn't know the size of the room, and I've been praying for 50 people. So there's about 6 more coming, so just make room.
Make room.
That's really simply, like, where we come from, and our and plus our whole, like, team is here supporting us and loving us. So thanks for that, guys. Wait, what? All right. So a couple of things, I guess, that we really work in, where we work now is really, there's not a lot of parent involvement, and that's kind of a, probably a lot of you guys understand that and see where we're coming from that, and that was kind of the topic that kept coming up. But yeah, there's not a lot of parents. Parents don't really care. We've probably met about, 20% of our parents of the youth group. Obviously more because in the kids ministry because the parents drop them off. But yeah, that's kind of the context that we're coming from. And some of the key things that you guys probably know all this stuff already, and I feel kind of lame talking after Wayne Cordero's been hitting on discipleship and all of that. But just some of the pragmatic stuff that I think I keep coming back to and that I need reminded of. The heart of it, you know, one, you can't reproduce what you don't have. So, man, your relationship with God has to be key to everything. And if you start getting funky, your kids are going to start getting funky. So, like, you're just multiplying what you have. You can't give away what you don't have. Come back to that with Jesus. Be in love with him or don't do it. Do it on purpose. Pray for your kids. This is obvious, like, stupid stuff, but I had to come back to it last month, like, you know, just taking pictures of all my kids and praying for them and asking God, like, what you have for them. Pray for your kids. Where else? Oh, yeah, do it on purpose. Don't wait for them to come to you because they never will. Pick out a few. Pray for who you should pour into, 3 or 4 kids, and just start bugging them and annoying them. A way of honoring them is believing more in their destiny than in their history. That so many times we pick out a kid that's like, Gina has looked at me a couple times and been like, really, babe? Like, I don't think you're kind of wasting your time there. So believe more in their destiny than their history. A couple of just like pragmatic, easy things. Give them something that they can succeed in. Don't like, you know, if it's the shyest kid in the world, probably don't make them preach the first week that you get with them. Give them room to fail. Make it okay that they don't succeed every time. inspect often. You inspect what you value. If you don't inspect, if you just give them something and let them run with it and don't come back and inspect it, you probably really don't care about it, and they can tell that. One of my favorite ones, if you haven't made them mad, you haven't started discipling them yet. If you haven't had a good fight, you think you're discipling, you're not. If they're not mad at you, if you're not fighting something out, you haven't really gotten in there yet. So just challenge you that it's okay to do that. They need it, and yeah.
It's good because we also run an ELN program, and it's interesting because they're all mentored by people in the church, but we get them day in and day out. It's like a parent thing, you know, and I refer it to, remember when your kid was 2 years old and they followed you around the kitchen all the time and you were trying to get things done, and there were days when you were like, oh, I need some space. And it's funny because for me that's been a lot to get used to, but the beautiful thing about that is they're around us all the time. And what I did not know was that by growing their character, I would be also growing mine. And it's really beautiful because we do have conflict, and I've told a couple of them, we have a girl with us that can kind of lay below the radar a lot. And the other thing is when John says to pray for them, like when I go on walks, I pray for my own three kids and I pray for them. I ask the Lord, what do you have for these babies? And what is it in them if they didn't have a parent, because we don't have a lot of parent involvement? How can I help me to see what it is that you see in them? And I know for this one who lays pretty low, I've seen her on a stage speaking the gospel boldly. And so because I know that, I prod her and I push her. And so it's knowing inside of them what that is, and that makes her angry at me. Matter of fact, she didn't talk to me for about a day and a half one time, and I had to tell her, I'm okay with you being upset with me right now, because I'm okay with a little bit of conflict, because I care about you, you know, and I'm not going anywhere, you know. And so just learning that with me, I'm trying to revamp a whole ministry right now, because I just took over the kids ministry about 7 months ago, and I had a bunch of vision, but I can't do that vision alone, and I have to take people with me. And because in my kids ministry I don't have a lot of parent involvement, the neat thing in the way that I've chose to see it is that I can help the parents develop into better parents also. And so my goal, I don't have a lot of them right now, but my goal is to get couples into my ministry with kids, so that way they feel like they're doing things alongside with their kids, and maybe it's not so much as a sacrifice, because I believe in ministry with your kids. I'm probably the worst at my church. They probably want to punch me in the face because I'm like, bring your kids with you. You know, we have worship nights, and this one mom asked, I just really wanted to bring my kid in there with me. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, absolutely. And so I really believe in letting them do life with us in ministry so that they grow passionate about what we're passionate about. And so I have one couple that I've started that with, and it's been really neat. They just renewed their vows in front of their own kids, and I got to be there for that and start to see just that family thing come. So it's neat because not only am I discipling their kids, but you really are discipling the family. And what a blessing that is to be able to do that, to pour into their lives as a unit. And so, yeah.
One other quick thing, something that I was challenged with recently. My cousin is a pastor and has been for a while, and I asked him, so he's in Napa, it's beautiful, and I said, how long do you plan on being there? He said, about 50 years. I said, did I hear what you said right? did you say 15? He said, no, 50 years. And so it just really challenged me that and his take was, that how do you cultivate relationships and you know, just really have effectiveness in these short time periods that we so often experience, you know. So yeah, stay planted somewhere if you can.
One more thing, and then I'll be done. I was asking the Lord, you know, what is it that I think matters? And sorry, I'm such a visual person, so I'm going to pull this out for you really quick. But I had gone on a walk here, and I had gone into this store, and I bought a pair of shoes, and then I was trying to convince this guy that I wanted to buy this candle. And he was like, that's my used, he had an accent, that's my used candle. I'm like, I know, I want to buy it. Like, can I buy it? And because what the Lord showed me is, so many times, like, we want this candle that's, this one's perfect. When we're looking for leaders, we want that leader. Oh, let's just find the kid with the perfect family and the perfect situation who already knows Jesus, and it's all great. But I know that God said to me, and I'm thankful that someone saw me And really, you guys, my wick was buried way, way deep down in a bunch of wax. And they had to be able to take fire to that and let that out and dig it out and find that light. And then once you find that light, you have to be diligent enough to stand over when the wind comes to make sure that it lights deep enough so that it can hold its own. And then you release it. Like, that's really a beautiful picture of our responsibility. And I think that these are awesome, and I so want to come alongside them. But when I dig down deep and find that light within them and then let it burn strong, how beautiful is that? And so that was just the visual God had given me for discipleship.
So a big part of what we do to disciple is just have kids be around us all the time. They're welcome to come on Wednesdays. Sometimes they get out as early as noon. They have early release on Wednesdays, and they just come to the church and hang out with us and just just be with us, and they don't have any other place to be. And just overcoming, like we have a saying like on my wall that says WIT, whatever it takes. If you want to get something done, you'll find a way. If not, you'll find an excuse. And just really going the extra mile. For a long time, we worked with an after-school program where we would help tutor and whatever, and then would be able to take the vans. The students would come to the youth group, but we found that they weren't coming because they were hungry.
They didn't want to go from lunch all the way to 9 o'clock at night before they ate again.
Yeah. And so we just found somebody who was able to sponsor McDonald's value menu, you know, $20 a week, so that they could eat and come, you know, after that. And so just there's unique challenges that you find. Yeah, just little silly things that, and it ended up being such a huge blessing to the people who were giving, you know, that, like, telling them stories of what God was doing in their life and how, you know, just, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, my name is Reed, and our discipleship program is a lot more kind of program-based, but it wasn't always like that, and I'll kind of explain my journey and why, how we arrived at where we are. So when I was in Bible college, I was a junior, and I really wanted to be a youth pastor, but, man, I didn't really know what I was doing, and no one was going to hire me. And so what we decided to do is we just got me and my three best friends, and we said, okay, let's go find a church that's all, like, old people, and there's no youth ministry there. And so that's what we did. We found this crazy old, just in the downtown part of the city, and it was all like 70 plus people, and they hadn't seen a youth in there for years, right? Years. And so they had this giant basement, and we said, hey, could we just come and, like, start a youth ministry here? And they're like, okay, there's no kids here, but, you know, you can use the basement whenever you want. And so we started this thing. And it grew just really, really fun, really great group of people. As time went on, there were certain things we couldn't do, and we found out a lot of the growth that we had, it wasn't sustaining, and a lot of kids were coming in, a lot of kids were leaving, we couldn't go to camps, we didn't have any discipleship, so we had a huge backdoor. Long story short, that church ended up merging with Mandy's church, so our church kind of closed down, but they asked me to bring all of our youth that we had collected and our leaders over to the new church. And so I kind of snuck in the back door of ministry, and I came over. They put me on staff. But I knew that we needed to do something a lot different. And now that we were at a larger church with families and things in place, we could do some things. So I started out with some sixth graders, and that was about 5 years ago. So I've been with them sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. And then I started as a middle school pastor, but then when they transferred from eighth grade into ninth grade, I became the high school pastor, and so I've kind of got to walk with these kids, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and then now ninth, and the majority of them are in 10th grade right now. So we have this big group of kids that I've been with for almost 6 years, and 3 years ago, we decided to start a discipleship program that would really essentially help these kids get to the next level, because you guys are probably with me. You have a big group of students or a small group of students, and you, as you begin to, like it talks about knowing the condition of your flocks, right? You kind of assess students, and you lay in bed at night, you say, you know what, these kids, they're not reading their Bibles, and I know it. Or these kids, they only care about themselves. They don't care about anybody else. And so those were kind of the two big ones. They're not reading their Bibles, and they only care about themselves. And so we said, okay, let's create a student leadership discipleship team that will be focused on those things, reading their Bible and caring about others. And so we just said, okay, if you want to be in this, it's going to be great. We're going to go on retreats. We're going to go on missions trips. It's going to be a lot of fun. But if you want to be in it, what you got to do is you got to read your Bible every single day, every day, do your devotions, and then once a month we're going to go on an outreach just with everybody. And so it was really, it was a service team, and it was a Bible reading team, essentially. But we called it leadership, and we would do really fun things. Like, we would get everyone in a circle, and they knew they had to do their devotions. Because do you guys know what popcorn is? Do your kids ever talk about, okay, popcorn, you? It's when you're reading in a circle, and then after you finish yours, you get to call on somebody else. You kind of put them on blast a little bit. And so what we do is we just sit in a circle, and we'll say, okay, you know, Aaron, what did you have September 18th? And so he'll have to turn his journal. September 18th, I had this, you know. And we don't embarrass people, but they know that, okay, they embarrass themselves. How about that? Yeah. But so we sit in the circle, and then after Aaron says his, then he gets to call someone in the circle. And we don't let them work out beforehand. Like, dude, make sure you call, like, September 19th, because I did that one. You know, like, it's just very random, you know. And so then they'll call on this person, and then this person says, I have this. And if they didn't have it, we don't all just kind of go, You know, we don't judge them, but we just kind of say, okay, well, just turn to the one that's closest to that date that you would have. And if it's, like, 3 weeks apart from that, then we know, okay, this person hasn't been doing their devotions. And they know that it is... You don't have to be in student leadership, but if you say you want to, then we're going to hold you accountable. We've had students that say, would you really not let me go on the end of your missions trip just for not doing my devotions? And it's like, of course. You know, the Lord says if you cannot be trusted in small things, you can't be entrusted in big things. And I don't mean to say that reading the Bible is a small thing, but it's something that every single day they need to be at the feet of Jesus, or else I'm not going to send them out there and ask them to lead others if they're not leading themselves. So we started that 3 years ago. We had about 13 students. The next year we had, I think, 24 students. And then last year we had 27 students that were in it. And we've hit a lot of problems, and I would love to address some of those things that just happen to a youth group when you have half of it in a really intense discipleship group and the other half is not. You can get division. You can get, like, an in crowd. You can get all different things. I mean, I could give you probably a list of 5 or 6 things that were major challenges that we're still working through. But what I can tell you is seeing these students grow, and they're in the team all year. They're doing outreaches every month, in their Bible every day. And then at the end of the year, we do a VBS for our church, and we kind of lead that for the students in our church. And then what we do is we take all that material and all that curriculum that our church has bought, and then we go out to the Navajo Reservation right here in Arizona, and we go and we put on a VBS for about 70 or 80 Navajo kids. And it's our high schoolers, our junior hires, leading everything, teaching everything, writing skits, and it's just phenomenal watching them come alive when real responsibility is put on them. And I'm telling you, man, they are different kids when they're actually given responsibility. You know, the same kid that you're telling, you better be quiet, why don't they listen to me? You know, that kid comes to you at the missions trip and says, why don't they listen to me? You know, and it's like, you're reaping it, man. You are reaping that. So I would love to answer questions, kind of the ins and outs of our program. So if you guys have questions, let me know. So that's what we do.
Yeah.
About
when you have half the group that's really on target, you're investing in, and then you have others. How do you keep it?
Sure. Well, I love setting a high bar, right? That's huge. You have to have a high bar. But something that Kurt Johnson at Saddleback down in Los Angeles, he said, is if you only have one bar, you're going to leave a lot of students behind that can't reach up, that can't jump the hurdle, or that can't do that. And if that's all you want is that one group of students and that's all you have time for, then go for it. But there needs to be a system in place where you have many different bars for many different kids. And it's, you have a baseline where you say, okay, everyone, you can read your Bible every day. That's not hard. That's nothing that is too hard for you to do. But there might be things that you ask more of some students and have a little bit more grace with the student that just got saved. Their parents aren't Christian. If they miss discipleship, I'm a little bit more graceful for them than the student that their dad is like the pastor at the church, right? It's just, it's a little bit different. And I think by being there for years and years and years, you kind of earn the right to be more firm with certain kids than with others. Anyways, going back to the question, in a certain sense, it has really kind of almost created a division in our group. The students that are the in-group that I'm spending all my time with and the students that are not. And I honestly, I'd be lying if I said I know how to fix this. It's not easy. It's hard. There's things that we do, like we always are reinforcing, okay, students, student leaders, you guys are the leaders here. You're the ones that are supposed to be out there welcoming students. You're setting things up. This Wednesday night, evangelistic night, might not necessarily be for you, but you are on the team to help pull others in. And so what we've essentially tried to do is we kind of have our Wednesday night that's really fun, evangelistic, and then we have our Sunday morning, which is the discipleship thing. And we found that there are certain students that don't, they're not here yet, right? They're not at the student leadership. I can be there at all these trainings and these, but I also don't want them to just be once a week attenders that don't do anything. And so what we're really wanting to do in this next season is kind of create a mid-level, they're not quite in discipleship yet, but it's some sort of like a small group is essentially what we're thinking about starting Sunday mornings for. You can still come in. There's still an accountability and a challenge to be reading the word, and they'll still be welcome to go on the outreaches with us, but it's not quite at that biggest level yet. And so it's trying to find out, and you guys will figure this out, at least I did. When you're launching something like this, you don't always see the backlash and the things that might come, and it's kind of figuring it out as you go along. And so seeing that, analyzing it over years, and trying to fill in the gaps and fill the pipeline, it's kind of what we're trying to do right now, but haven't mastered it by any means. So, yeah.
All right. Well, as they've shared, what questions do you have? Can we talk to you about any questions you have? Oh, wait, it's being recorded, so that's why we have to have the microphones.
So my question was just how often were you organized thing for your structured element of the group discipleship? Yeah. Like, how often do you do the popcorn?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah. So our Sunday morning, we have two services. And the 9 o'clock service, we're all in just a general kind of youth class. And then for the student leadership, it's every other Sunday, and then it's during second service. And so it's every other Sunday is when we have a training, and we do it so twice a month throughout, from when we start in October, and then we close the season at the end of July. Then we have 3 months off. So we'll meet every other week, and then after one of those, so once a month, we'll stay on Sunday and do a Sunday afternoon outreach. And then always after the outreach, we'll go back to one of the parents' house and do an afterglow, and we'll kind of debrief the meeting and just have food together, eat together. And so that turns into a long day, right? I get there at probably 7 in the morning. Students start getting there 8, 8:30, and I'm with them until probably 8 at night, sometimes 9 or 10 at night. And it's crazy. I mean, that's like almost like a missions trip experience every week, right? You know, where they just stop playing cute and they stop pretending like they're all happy all the time. You're with them for 12 hours in a row. Man, it gets a little bit crazy, but there's such a unity that comes. But to answer the question, it's every 2 weeks, and then they do the devotions every single time. So that, because it's huge. We don't want to say this is important to us and then watch a movie during our time or something. Like, we'll go through it. So,
right. John and Gina, why don't you talk about student leader aspect or anything structured?
We used to meet every other week, and we've gone to once a month, because now that Gina's the children's pastor, she stole one of my meetings from from our students, basically. But yeah, we also use time like before Wednesday nights. They come early and set up, and you know they're there for a couple hours beforehand on that. And
we have check-in, and yeah. I mean, we really try to know where they're at.
Yeah.
That's really important. We feel like if they're, we want them to do all kinds of things for ministry-wise, but I think if we see them bleeding somewhere, we need to address that, mm-hmm. you know. And I think sometimes we just want to say, hey, can you wrap that up real quick? Gosh, you're bleeding right there. Like, it's dripping all over the place. We get a Band-Aid for that, mm-hmm. you know, and then can you go do what it is I want you to do?
Yeah.
You know, but we're not just developing leaders, we're developing human beings, you know, followers of Christ, and they need to be whole. And so our student leadership is amazing. I mean, John cannot be there on a Wednesday, and they will run it amazingly. I mean, there's no hiccups. They completely have ownership of what they're doing. One of the things that we instilled right when we got there was we will be the friendliest youth group around. If you walk up and you don't know anyone, you will never feel like somebody there doesn't care about you. And we were Nazis about it. I mean, like, still to this day, if we see them standing around clicking, I'll look at them, and I don't even have to anymore. I just, you know, and they know.
One of my favorite questions was, did a big group of new students just leave here? Because I just see three leaders, and what happened? Did they just go somewhere? Did I miss it? And they're like, oh, yeah, sorry.
Or we'll be like, did you guys just meet each other? I mean, don't you know each other? So, yeah, so that's one of the things, and we've had friends come, and we've asked them to check up on that. Hey, come here and see how you feel when you come in. And our students don't know we're doing that, and then they show up, and we want to see how they're being treated. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge thing that they are. We do not want that to remain the thing. And just also to break their hearts for what's going on in the other kids' situations, to make sure that they're aware. And we don't go into detail of what's happening in other kids' lives, but to make sure that they're aware, like, God, when we meet beforehand, we all meet in the sanctuary, and we'll worship, and then we stand in the circle, and we purposely motivate the prayers to be towards the kids that aren't there yet. And so we always say, hey, we're going to have worship time. Come to God. Get it all out, what it is that you're struggling with. And then ask God, fill me up so that I'm here to pour out, so that I'm here for them. And so that's really important, too, to get their focus on what it is that they're supposed to be doing, which is pouring out, which if we're doing our job, which is pouring in, then they can do that, you know. So
I think one thing we've had to learn as when we stepped in as senior pastors is we had to find out what worked for us, because we were doing the senior pastor thing and on Sunday mornings, and then literally an hour later we'd be opening the skate ramp and we'd be there for, you know, 5 or 6 hours, and that would be our entire Sunday, and we'd be done. And so for the health of just our marriage, the health of our church, we actually ended up having to close down our youth group, because we're like, we can't do it. But we realized that we're just naturally youth people. Like, if you come to our church, like, you're going to hear it on a weekly basis. Like, if you're going to pour into someone, you're going to be discipling young people. And so so Jared has actually created an internship program, and it is just for the young adults in our church. So they meet a couple times that you can talk about.
I meet with, we have like 7 interns right now, and most of them are here serving, and right there in the front row too. Started with a formal application process, because, you know, we don't have a youth group, but I wanted to make sure I was intentional about, you know, where I'm pouring my time, because being a senior pastor, a business owner, and you know, bivocational, and just don't have the time to do all, you know, all these things. And so I wanted to be really intentional. And so we started this application process. And there's just in that alone, I mean, opened up so many, like, conversation points, so much opportunity, finding out what's going on in their life, what they're struggling with. And then just the simplicity of, like, look, you want a job someday? Here's how you fill out an application. And it's just, you know, it's that dad moment because parents aren't involved and they're not just teaching these kind of real practical skills, and walking them through that and coaching them on that. And then just all of the things that you find in that application, and that's where you start. Here's some of the needs. Here's the areas that we need to build upon. And so I meet with the interns twice a week, unless they have some other conflict. Some of them have jobs and stuff, and so we allow for that. But I meet with them twice a week. It's roundtable. They are active in some area of ministry. They do have some tasks that they have to do around the church, whether it's cleaning toilets, doing check-in, kind of speaking into some of the sermons. I kind of share with them where we're going, and they get to kind of process or give examples on some of the stuff. They do help with some of the set and decoration and backdrop, and so they're involved in the presentation somehow. Also, you know, social media, they're blasting stuff on Facebook, and they're doing some of the things that, you know, we don't have the staff and we don't have the time to do, and they're really help in that area. They also, as part of this process, they have to identify a key leader in the church to interview and meet with. And that, so they're not just gleaning from me and just getting a snapshot of one leader, but they are they have to sit down and go, you know, hey, what can I learn from your personal disciplines, from your spiritual disciplines? What does devotions look like for you? What does your quiet time with God look like? What can I learn from, and then everything. What can I learn about team building? What can I learn about just dealing with relationships? What can I learn from your mistakes, from, you know, whatever past mistakes you've made in relationships, ministry, marriage, whatever? What can you tell me as an emerging leader? And so we're trying to facilitate those type of relationships beyond just our conference table, that they're gleaning from other leaders. And then also really teaching them one of the last big kind of portions of it is that they understand that all of us are full-time ministers and all of us are to be messengers of the Lord. Like, we're all communicating the Word of God. And so teaching them how to handle the Word of God, how to study it, how to extract truth and then communicate it. So every one of them has some type of topic as I get to know them and learn strengths and weaknesses. And so they'll get a book. Most of them have a book. Here, read this, and you're going to be the expert on our leadership team, and I want you to come back, and I want you to teach us. Mm-hmm. And so they're taking this, you know, whatever it is their need is, they're learning it, and then they're communicating it back to us. And then so allows me to speak into their life, but then also just the practical side, how to communicate, platform presentation, preparation, all those kind of things. And so that's what our internship looks like now. We're in the first phase of that. And
mm-hmm. That's good. All right. Another question.
Yeah. Oh. I'm the children's pastor at my church. I'm also the media arts guy at my church and web design at my church. So I have to juggle children's ministry stuff, getting things ready for lessons, getting PowerPoint displays ready, getting object lessons ready. And then I also have to take the sermons that are preached on Sundays and Wednesdays and edit those, and then I have to publish those onto the website, and then I have to update the website. So mm-hmm. Explain to me how I can effectively start a discipleship program with the time that I have that gets them ready hand them off to these guys and say, you're not just getting kids, you're getting kids that are ready to be leaders, even though they're new to your youth group, but they have the tools already inside them, and they understand what discipleship is, they understand what being a servant is. What is there, like a program that we can do? Is there, I mean, that's a big focus here, right, is discipleship at this convention, but nobody said, start out doing this and work from there. You know, nobody's given us a kind of a blueprint roadmap, kind of mm-hmm. go in this general direction.
If I could address that and give you guys a little time to think about that. The first thing that jumps out to me is you can't be the only one. So I think one of the pitfalls that we fall into in Next Gen Ministry is that we're not spending enough time with the adults, with our team, of developing a team and then feeding into the team so that the things that are important to you as a leader, you're not the only spokesperson for it. You know, this week we're talking about having a voice. Your voice gets magnified when you send it through other people, that whole exponential thing. So, you know, one of the things that was important to me in children's ministry was having an intentional plan for, you know, at this age, we want to, by this age, say 8 years old, we want to know that kids are saved. We had a book, it's called Jesus Discovery Book, through the Billy Graham Association, that when we had nights where kids made a commitment to Christ or response, then we gave them that book and then had a reading plan for them that they did at home. Then they brought it back. So then I'm not the one feeling like I have to disciple these kids. We're putting it into the parents' hands. If they don't have a parent or family involved, then we have other mentors that help them. And then looking at, okay, to me, by the time they're getting to the youth ministry, understanding the Holy Spirit was very important, being filled with the Holy Spirit. Foursquare has an excellent resource online under foursquare.org tools. I think it's printed resources, the Holy Spirit Discovery curriculum, teaching on that, and then, you know, kind of keeping track of what kids have responded in that, but also developing a small group model even within your children's ministry. So we had a midweek program, which was actually our stronger ministry for kids, and if we had 50 kids in there, I had, let's say, five good leaders that those leaders I met with every month. And then they had 10 kids under them. And they each week had an attendance sheet, and then every month it was in a monthly log. Then they would turn that into me at the end of the month, and they would put things that were happening in these kids' lives. So again, I wouldn't have to be the one keeping track of all them. A lot of my attention, I've read somewhere where it says like 80% of your attention as a leader, as the leader, should be spent on your volunteers, really growing them. And then that's going to magnify your voice. So team building, feeding into a team, an intentional plan, and then knowing what resources will work. So Holy Spirit Discovery is excellent for children, as well as that whole Jesus Discovery book by Billy Graham. So that's just kind of an idea on that kid's side. But if you can map it out, this is ideally what I want to hand off to the youth ministry, and communicating with them what's important to them so that these kids are ready to continue that continuum. Any other ideas on that?
This is probably the lamest thing that you'll hear, but it's reality. Man, you just have to ask Jesus, because I think that was our big thing. Like, we, like Jared and I did youth ministry separately for years, and we knew how to run a youth group. But when we stepped in as youth, when we stepped in as senior pastors, like, we didn't know how to do it, and we just had to like really go before the Lord and be like, man, we were failing as youth pastors. Like, we were the senior pastors and the youth pastors, and we'd come back on Sundays and be like, man, we suck at this. Like, we were so good for so long, and we really had to go before the Lord, and there wasn't a blueprint. Like, it was, bottom line was like, this is where we need to be spending our time. And and so what I love is what you talked about with leaders, because as a youth pastor, I had to bring leaders along that worked with me, because I didn't have time, and I just didn't know how to do a lot of things. And I could have pulled off a lot of things really lame, or I could have pulled off a few things and let them do the other things really well. And so I think a big part really is your leadership team. Mm-hmm.
Even if you're starting with just one other person. Question?
So you talked about recruiting interns or hiring interns. Did you get those from a Bible college nearby or from the local church? Okay. Great. Thank you.
Just in talking kind of about adult leaders, from a children's perspective or a youth perspective, I'm wondering like how you like raise the accountability of your volunteers, or like how you like really inspire them to like be good volunteers.
That's actually been a huge goal of mine. One of the things with our in the children's ministry is that people just showed up late for their positions, and it would service would be starting on Saturday night at 6 o'clock, and it'd be 6:10, and I had nobody in there. And so one of the things that, one, like she said, a monthly meeting where you're getting in touch with their lives and continually sharing your vision. I feel like if they've been with me long enough, they should know the three things that are the most important to me and what goals those are. And so making sure that I make it clear to them, this is our values, this is our goals, this is what we're striving for. And I know for me, one of those things was excellence. And I actually put it in our mission statement. It was speaking over the kid's life, I want them speaking life over them from the moment that they walk into those little rooms, and I also want them to be on time, which I just kind of circled into the whole having an excellent mentality in what we're doing. And so sometimes, and then being willing to call them out on it when they don't, which is hard, because at first I had this idea that, oh, I can't say anything to you because you're volunteering. You know, how do I say, hey, when you're going to volunteer your time, if you could be here on time, that would be great. And so, but that's what you say, you know, I thank you so much for being here, and I so appreciate who you are, but we're really trying to switch things up and just really have an excellence about what we're doing, and we want people to see that throughout our church, and it starts here in the children's ministry. And so, if you're going to be late, I'm going to need a phone call. Also, if you're not going to make it, I need you to find yourself a replacement, because I want you to have ownership over it. That is your time slot. It is yours. And I want you to own that. And I want you to know I trust you from the list of names that I give you when I send the schedule out to find the right person for your class. And so just making sure that they take it on as their own. And then calling them out in those awkward situations and saying, you know, it was 6 o'clock when you called me and told me you weren't going to be here. That really doesn't work, you know, real well for me. It makes it kind of chaotic, and we really want to run a smooth ship, and we really want people to feel well taken care of. So it's always pointing them towards the goal, you know, not exactly negatively what they're doing wrong, but what your goal is.
Mm-hmm. Something with student ministry that really helped out for us too, we were looking at, I was just super frustrated because the bar was set, like, you know, everybody should be here at 6 o'clock and be here in a small group in every single meeting, and I realized that we needed to set different levels of leadership, that we have level 3 leaderships, level 2 leaderships, and level 1 leaders. And the level 1 leader is easy. You just, if you can be here every Wednesday by the time it starts, you know, at 7 o'clock, I don't expect you to set stuff up. I just expect you to be here, love on students, and that's it. Go home. So setting different levels. And so my expectations weren't, you know, that you were going to be this superhero when you only have time to be an average, you know, youth leader. That really helped out, is setting different expectations. Yeah. And then you can still hold accountability to that expectation, like if they're not there, but yeah.
I'll say one more thing is people make time for what they really want to do. Like, they just do. If they want to be there, they'll do it. And so I think the key is getting them to really own it. And the easiest way to get them to own it is having them speak into when you're creating things and you're imagining the ministry. And then having them, which is huge for us, debrief afterwards. Because we'll do a debrief almost after everything. And it's not just so that we can fine-tune. I mean, it's important to fine-tune. But when you debrief and you say, okay, guys, let's talk about our service tonight. What did we like? What didn't go well? What could we do better? They kind of come alive and they begin to say, oh, well, you know, there's this problem with this. And maybe if we did this, maybe I could go home and I could grab this and I could bring this next time. And you're getting your whole team, what they're doing when you're debriefing and their problem solving, is it's no longer your problem, it's everyone's problem. And then they kind of contribute, and they're in. And so I think being together, meeting, letting them dream with you and build it, and then debriefing and fine-tuning it with you, and they'll be into it. So,
because if they can celebrate, if they have that ownership, then they're going to celebrate the wins with you, and that's going to keep them on board.
One more thing I thought of, too, was that in the first couple months I tried to sit in the rotation with each one of them that was in the classroom, and I brought a clipboard with me and asked them, what is it that you feel like you need in here that you don't have? And so I would write their name down and exactly what they said that they felt like they didn't have, and then I made sure by the next time they came back to work that I had fixed the problem. And then I would show it. Hey, I heard what you said about one of them was that we didn't have enough batteries for things when they ran out, and they needed a screwdriver that fit all the little things. It cost me $20. And they felt honored. They felt like they had a part in what was going on, and like I listened to what they said. And so when they came back, I said, hey, I got the batteries, and I got the screwdriver, and it's right here located for you. Thank you so much for your suggestions. I really appreciate that, because you're in here all the time and I'm not. And so I thought that was a great way to kind of really let them know I'm listening to you and I care what you think, you know.
That's good. We had also wanted to share some resources with you. So Reed has some stuff I'm going to ask him to share. And if you guys think about maybe a couple resources that have been really helpful to you.
Yeah. All right. So our leadership has... And I don't know what it would be like for children, but for youth, man, you guys, you know, students are really into things like social justice, serving, And you see great success with things like Tom's Invisible Children and things like that. There's just a momentum in the youth that as much as they care about themselves, there's something about wanting to change the world. If you ask any kid, do you want to change the world? They're going to say, yes, I want to change the world. And so we've got a lot of movement as far as doing that sort of thing, kind of riding that movement and having our leaders not just be people that know how to set up church, because that's not really even ministry. That's just setting up church, right? People that want to change the world. And so this book right here, Deep Justice Journeys, it's by Kara Powell and Brad Griffin out of Fuller down there. Deep Justice Journeys is all about like doing justice work with your missions and your teams like that. So this is a great one. They have a student version and then a leader version that kind of walks you through these. And it says 50 activities to move from missions trips to missional living. So that's a really good one. This one right here, this was put out by Blake Mikoski. This is the Toms that you guys have heard of, Tom's Shoes, and that's kind of captured a generation, right? This whole idea of doing something for people around the world. This guy wrote a book, and it's a lot of business principles, but there's some chapters in there that are really solid about learning how to tell your story and care about people other than yourselves. So if you will go on like Tom's online, you can get a whole teaching kit from them. They'll send you like their documentary, their story, a teaching guide. They'll send you a T-shirt for free. They'll send you all of that, and it's just put out by Tom's. And the kids just love it. And I mean, we didn't go through it all year, but we definitely took some things from what they're doing. Then this one is—it's just called "Help, I'm a Student Leader." It's by Doug Fields. Almost every youth minister I've talked to that has student leadership, they go through this book. It's phenomenal. It's kids of middle school and high schoolers really respond well to it, and it's not too heady. It's very practical. Doug Fields is funny. So this one, "Help, I'm a Student Leader," and then one other book that we've used is just Leadership 101. That's a good one. And this one is by Denise Van Eck. So Leadership 101. And I know there's new stuff coming out all the time, but these are the kind of four resources that we've used in the 3 years that we've done it. So I wanted to show you guys those. And just that idea of serving others, we say this all the time, that you're never more like Jesus than when you serve, right? And so talking about leadership without talking about servanthood is not right, you know. So yeah, so those are our four. Do you guys have other resources or things?
So youthleaderscoach.com has cheap stuff that's great. Jeannie Mayo puts all that stuff on. There's a bunch of free stuff on there. And I've actually been through a mentorship program with her called The Cadre. And if anybody has the opportunity to do that, you all have the opportunity to do that. If you could go through that, oh my gosh, it's incredible. She's had 40 years of youth ministry experience and now just completely pours into people. You go out to her house twice as a male, three times as a female in her living room, and she just like pours out her life into you. If there's any way that you can talk your senior pastor into paying for it or find somebody to sponsor you or something, it's worth doing. The Cadre is what the mentoring program is called, and CADRE. It's a French word that means like warriors who fought as brothers, basically. And it really does. I have lifelong friends from there that I would die for. So youthleaderscoach.com and Jeannie Mayo is awesome.
I was telling my husband about this part of it. The ones I have are kind of lame. they just seem kind of silly. But what I've realized with discipleship is that, people just want to spend time with you. Mm-hmm. And if you're really going to teach something, it's just going to be spending some time with them. So, and this is one thing I know that Reed does, but like, I think you do, but like the whole devotional, like the first thing I teach anyone is just the soap devotions, because it's simple. It's easy to remember. It's an easy thing to do. So any of the girls that I meet with, like, they're going to know how to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's a one-time thing, they're going to know this is what you need to be doing. And that's, for me, that's a huge thing. And then there are these cheesy books at the Christian bookstore, and they're so, like, just Christian looking. And they're in a lot of times they're in a wheel, and they're just devotional books, and they're really thin, and like there'll be one for every book of the Bible or one for like the names of God. And they're thin, and there's like, I don't know, it ranges from 18 to 22 chapters, and I've always taken girls through those. And so we'll meet together and we'll do one chapter, and it just really allows you to take it as deep as you want to go. They're kind of like Bible studies, but I usually do it one-on-one or in a group with two or three of them. And I love it because it's allowing them to go deep into the Word. It's allowing them to really understand, like, oh, this is what the book of John is talking about. Like, I never would have gotten that out of it. But it's simple. It's really small, so they don't feel overwhelmed. And so as far as discipleship goes, I use those books. So I always have to take them in and say, I know these don't look really cool, but, like, what are you interested in learning about? And the last thing I really do is I'm actually taking Mel through right now. It's emotionally healthy. There's emotionally healthy church and then emotionally healthy
spirituality.
And, man, if you're going to do it, you have to stay on top of it because it's a hard book to work through, and you're going to really dig up some stuff. But it's good, and it's really good. You're not, and it has to be a safe place. You can't be like, let's get all the women in the church to go through it, because that's not a safe place, right? So if you're, it has to be the right book for the right people. So,
that's good.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, we are approaching 4:15 here. I want to see if you guys would you be cool about giving your email addresses, so that if there's anything that was sparked in you today that you're like, you know what, I would like to get more information or find out how he or she did that. So, Reed, why don't you start, and you guys can write these down.
Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L, Reed, R-E-I-D, PowellReed at gmail.com.
He makes our emails, so he would know what mine is. Mine is Gina, G-I-N-A, and then at northrockchurch.com.
And mine is pastormandy.theriver@gmail.com.
And then mine, if anybody wants that, is L. Klingenmeyer at foursquare.org. L. Let me spell it. L. Can pack it. So L, and then K-L-I-N-G-E-N-M-E-I-E-R at foursquare.org. Mandy gives us that whole continuum then. So. Let's thank our panel for their investment for today. So, and again, if you have any questions, please feel free to email any of us. We'd love to help each other out. So.